Welcome to the Word at First Pres. For Lent, we are doing a sermon series called Breaking the Cycle, Discovering Our Spiritual Roots. This is a series that focuses on how we can bring balance to our body, mind, and emotions that often prevent us from experiencing our spirituality. I hope you enjoy.
Our first scripture reading is from Genesis. I feel like we've read everything in this book at least four times. Genesis 11, 1 through 9. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as they migrated from the east, they came upon a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make some bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone, and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its tops in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we shall be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth." And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which mortals had built. And the Lord said, "Look, they are one people, and have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. Nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language there, so that they will not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, it was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Our second scripture reading is Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. Jesus and his disciples came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when he had stepped out of the boat, immediately a man out of the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. He lived among the tombs, and no one could restrain him anymore, even with a chain, for he had often been restrained with shackles and chains, but the chains he wrenched apart and the shackles he broke in pieces, and no one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always howling and bruising himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and bowed down before him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he had said to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." Then Jesus asked, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." He begged him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now there on the hillside, a great herd of swine was feeding, and the unclean spirits begged him, "Send us into the swine, let us enter them." So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the swine, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned in the sea. The swine herds ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then people came to see what it was that had happened. They came and they saw the demoniac sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had had the legion, and they were afraid. Those who had seen what had happened to the demoniac and to the swine reported it, and they began to beg Jesus to leave their neighborhood. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed by demons begged him that he might be with him, but Jesus refused and said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and what mercy he has shown you." And when he went away and began to proclaim, And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So, we have been doing a sermon series in Lent called Breaking the Cycle, Discovering Our Spiritual Roots. If you've watched online or you've been here for the last couple of weeks, you know that the idea behind this series is that we're talking about the various issues and impediments that prevent us from experiencing our spirituality. And what we've kind of discussed and described is how we have all of these competing interests going on inside of us. So we have what's happening in our bodies. We have these bodily needs that are going on, right? We have the things that are happening in our minds, our thoughts. And then underneath all of that, we have all of these emotions. And these three things, body, mind, emotion, this accounts for the vast majority of human behavior. Because these three things are always kind of interacting with each other. They kind of go between each other. The way, I don't know if you were here, but I used that analogy of a pinball machine. So you know how when you shoot a pinball up and it gets to the top and then there's those electric bumpers and it'll hit the bumpers, it'll shoot all around at the top? That's how most people are. The vast majority of people. This is where we live our lives. We're just going from body to mind to emotion, and it's just right up there. And that's a problem because underneath all of those things is our spirituality. So you have to calm each of these things if you want to be able to get to that. And that's what this sermon series is really trying to do. So last week, we talked about the bodily needs. And we talked about how those various things can be an impediment to our spirituality. We're not coming back to that again. So if you didn't watch it, you kind of need to go back and see it if you care enough to know what's going on with that. And from now, we're going to move forward. And each week from this point forward, we're going to be dealing with emotions, primary emotions, and we're going to talk about how those emotions can either enhance or detract from our spirituality. And the thing that we're going to do within these, because we're talking about emotions, we're also going to be talking about thoughts at the same time, because thoughts and emotions, they tend to feed each other quite a bit. So you probably have seen in your bulletin, did you see the nice little color emotion wheel that's in there? All right, so this is the emotion wheel. I don't expect you all to be able to read it up there, but it's in your bulletin so that you can see it each and every week. And the nice thing about an emotion wheel is that it's this useful tool that allows us to kind of expand out and understand, to have a better vocabulary of what our emotions are, because for many of us, our understanding of our emotions is very limited. We kind of lack the vocabulary to talk about what it is we're feeling. Most people would say that they feel four things, that they feel happy, mad, sad, and scared. Those are the four things that most people talk about. And so using the emotion wheel, and by the way, this isn't the only emotion wheel that's out there. There are plenty of emotion wheels that you can look at. I think all of them that I looked at had flaws in them. This was the one that I liked the most out of all of them. But what you see is that there are six primary emotions. We're going to go through each of those through Lent and into Easter. And this will be printed every week. You don't have to bring this back. It'll be in your bulletin every week so you can see it there. But the idea is that you can see how it trees out, right? So you have the primary emotion, then it trees out to other emotions. And so you can get into a great deal of specificity of what it is that you're feeling. So today we are dealing with the emotion of surprise. And I will be honest with you, I did not think surprise was an emotion. I had no idea that that was a thing. Like, when I think of surprise, I think of, surprise, here's a present for you, or when TC jumps out and tries to scare me when I'm in my office. So that's like surprise, right? Like, that's what we're talking about. But as I did my research, I realized, actually, surprise is a really big aspect of who we are as people. So surprise has two sides to it. It has a positive and a negative side. And I want to talk actually about the negative side first, and then we're going to get into the positive. So the negative side of surprised is when you can be overcome with bewilderment and you can be shocked almost. So when we talk about surprise in the negative sense, we can feel perplexed, disillusioned, confused. And I would say that if we were going to apply that to all of us right now, that's how we're dealing with Ukraine. So all of us right now, right, when we look at that, would you say you're perplexed? Would you say you're disillusioned? Would you say you're confused and bewildered? I'd say everybody who's watching this feels that way about it. And that's a natural response for us. So when I say it's a big kind of aspect of who we are, I hope that that makes sense, that it truly, truly is. Now, I will tell you that for me, if we kind of bring it home a little bit more personally, I felt a great deal of surprise over the last year and a half over the way some of my relationships have gone. So I have noticed that there have been relationships. These are people who I would call friends. And this isn't just in the church. This is here and outside of the church where people have literally cut off their relationships with me and stopped talking to me. Now, I know that I'm not the only person who's been through this. I've actually heard many, many stories of this happening to people where all of a sudden it just occurs and there's no explanation as to why it happens. And intellectually, I know the reason why this has occurred is because we've been through the pandemic. The pandemic has changed people's priorities. It's literally shifted people's minds and the way that they think. And so they've moved on. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, right? When somebody who you've been friends with for a long time or you assumed you were friends with, they just cut you off. And I'll tell you that for me, it's taken a toll on me. Because where I go is I immediately go into my head and I ask the question, why is this happening? So what did I do wrong? What did I say? I mean, I'm assumed that you all understand what I'm talking about. Like, this is what happens. And that creates this negative feedback loop. Because what happens is you sit up there and you start thinking about it, and then that reinforces. So that's the surprise. The surprise is they're gone. Like, you realize it all of a sudden. You're like, wow, this person, like, won't talk to me anymore. And then you start going through the negative side of that thought process, and it just reinforces the emotion. And you just keep coming back to it. Now, for me, I'm the kind of person who, when, if I have an issue, I want to sit down and I want to have a conversation one-on-one. That's just my way of doing things. Because to me, if we sit down and we have a conversation, even if we come and we realize we're at two different sides of the issue, I've heard what you have to say and I know where you're coming from. You've heard what I have to say. And we can go our separate ways, but at least we've talked about it, right? But when somebody refuses to talk to you, it feels like you're in this really challenging spot where you can't move forward and you don't, again, know why. And again, intellectually, I know why this happens, right? It happens because the person doesn't want to hurt your feelings, which, by the way, they already did by actually not having a conversation with you, right? They don't know how to articulate what it is that they're feeling. That's a big one. And a lot of people are conflict avoidant. Like, that's just true. A lot of people don't want to get into conflict. I don't see it as being a conflict. I see it as a hard conversation to have. And that hard conversation, yes, it's uncomfortable, but at least you walk away knowing where you stand. But when you're on the receiving end of it, right, and nobody has this conversation with you and you don't know, and you just kind of like, I don't know, you're left scratching your head, right? And what this says to me is that this kind of surprise, at the core of it, is really a lack of communication. And that's where I see the vast majority of problems that we face as humans coming from. It's just a lack of communication. We haven't been able to talk about it. And the story of the Tower of Babel, as much as you didn't like reading it for us, it really is a great illustration of how we as human beings, through lack of communication, can become confused and how that lack of communication can destroy our relationships. So let's talk a little bit about the story of the Tower of Babel, because it's a great story, right? Now, on the surface, you probably saw just reading it that it's kind of a story that's trying to explain why do we speak so many different languages, right? Like, that's kind of on the surface level of it. And you have to understand, at the time that this story was written, if you would go out into the villages and rural areas, what you would see is that these people in each village, they spoke a completely different language. And I don't mean like a dialect or a variation. Like, you know, you go to the South and there's a Southern accent, in the Midwest, we have the Midwestern accent and all that. We're talking like you go to a village, you have no idea what it is they're talking about. And so then you go to the cities in the Middle East in this ancient world, and they all spoke a primary language, kind of like here in Chicago or New York, right? So if you've probably met immigrants who've come over to Chicago, in their home, they're going to speak their native language, right? And probably even in their neighborhoods. But if you want to be able to do business outside of those little cloisters, then you're going to have to probably learn English, right, if you're going to survive here in the United States. Well, the same was true back then. And there was this question that they were trying to answer, which is, why the people in the cities, they all tend to speak one language, and the people in the villages, they speak multiple languages. So the way that they came up with this, or at least their understanding, was that at one time, there were a lot less people. And they all spoke one language. And as a result of speaking one language, they were actually able to better share ideas, which allowed them to create technology. And so this is, again, another comparison between the city and the villages. So in the villages, how do they build their structures? They built it with sticks, mud, and rocks. That's what they would do. But then you go to the city, and in the cities, they would build with bricks that were baked in ovens, and they'd cement it together with a mortar called bitumen. And so the idea is that you went to the cities, all of their buildings were built with these bricks. And it was like these really solid structures. And then out in the villages, they didn't have that. So again, in the cities, they had this wonderful technology. The villages, they didn't. The idea being that if you want to have progress, you have to be able to communicate. And the one language provides for that. So in this story, what happens? These people, they get together and they want to build a tower, right? Which to us, when you think of a tower, what do we think of? We think of like skyscrapers and stuff like that. So at the time, this story is called the Tower of what? The Tower of Babel, right? That actually comes from Babylon, is where it comes from. And if you were to go to Babylon in the ancient world when this was written, and you went to a city, you would find these large tower-like structures known as ziggurats. This is a ziggurat right there. This is what they look like. They were these step structures. And when you got to the top of them, they were about 300 feet tall. Like, now just imagine at this time, these are huge structures for the people of this day and time. And they were used for worshiping their gods. And there was a belief by the Hebrew people that if you could get high enough in the sky, that you could literally enter into heaven, that you would find steps to allow you to enter into heaven. Now, let me explain why that's the case. So, have you all ever been out at night and when there's no light pollution? You've been out in the middle of nowhere where there's no light pollution and you've looked up at the sky when it's a clear night? You may have noticed that it looks like there's a dome covering the sky, right? Now, what is that? That is our atmosphere. That's what that is. Well, at the time, they didn't realize it was the atmosphere. They believed that what they were looking at night was literally heaven. They didn't realize that the sun, our sun, was the same as those stars just further away, right? They didn't get that. They thought when they were looking at, when they were looking at the sky, that those were heavenly beings. And so if you could get high enough in the sky, you would get to these stairs at the edge of the dome, and you literally, there was a door, you could open the door and go on to the other side, and you'd be in heaven. So this is the idea, right? And so in the Tower of Babel, they build this tower, it's high enough, it gets them to the stairs, and they can walk into heaven, and that gives them the power of God. So what does God do? God confuses their languages, and then they scatter from the face of the earth. So this story is a parable, and it really, it has two different meanings. One meaning of it is that we as human beings, with our technology, we have been given godlike powers. So think about it, like when you go, you know, Kim, you're a nurse, right? What Kim can do as a person who works in the medical field, she can heal people in ways that was really only reserved for God back in the ancient world. I mean, that was the only, you would pray and you would hope, like, that God would heal you in that way. What we can do today with our medical technology is something that was only reserved for God for centuries, millennia, right? But we can do it today with our technology. The other thing that this story is really trying to convey to us is that we as human beings, we are crippled by our inability to communicate. So when we can't communicate with each other, things fall apart, right? So in the story, what happens? They're building the tower, God confuses the languages, and then they have to abandon building the tower because they can't talk to each other. And by the way, when God confuses their languages and they scatter, the whole concept is that those people go out and form the villages that form each of those languages. So the same thing, though, is true with our relationships, is it not? When you are unable to communicate and you're communicating ineffectively, what happens to your relationships? They fall apart and you have to abandon them because you can't convey what it is that you're thinking and what it is that you're feeling. And so in the story of the Tower of Babel, when they have their languages confused, this is an element of surprise, is it not? Like, think about it. They're going along and then, bam, they can't communicate. And all of a sudden, their relationships are destroyed because they leave off and they have to abandon each other. And I talked about how this has happened with me in my relationships, some here in the church, some outside of it. But I see this happening with couples all the time right now. All the time, where they are unable to communicate with each other. You know, they wake up one day and they realize we haven't really been speaking to each other for a long time, and they don't have a relationship anymore. And this is a side note, but if you are struggling with that, with your spouse or with your family, with a friend, with a child. This is an area, this is one of the few areas where I can actually do a decent job counseling people. That helping you to communicate is something that I do fairly well with. So if that's something that you struggle with, or you have somebody who you know who struggles with that, come and see me about that. We can talk about it. But at the core of it, I think what I've been trying to highlight for you is that surprise, this emotion of surprise, can destroy our relationships. That's one half of it. That's the negative side. But here's the other thing. Surprise can also build bridges and create relationships and strengthen them too. And I want to talk about that with our scripture from Mark. So this is a scripture we've read many, many times, because that was the only other book I read, right, was Mark. So we get to Mark, and Jesus, he goes, and he's to the Gerasene demoniac. Now, what's the name of the Gerasene demoniac? His name is Legion, right? Because he has many demons inside of him. Now, I've told you all that I think today, if we were to update this story, we would say that Legion is mentally ill, and that likely, based on the symptoms that are described there, he has schizophrenia. Likely. We can't say for sure, right? So if you've ever worked with people who are severely mentally ill, what you probably know is that they have burned a lot of bridges with their family and friends. Like, nobody really wants to help them anymore. When I worked at Trenton Psychiatric Hospital in Trenton, New Jersey, I worked with a lot of patients who, and this is Trenton, by the way, old picture, that's still there to this day. It does not look that nice anymore, I can tell you that, but that's what it looked like. The patients who were there, many of them had been there for years and had received no visits from family or friend in the entire time they had been there. And so what would happen is they would get released and they would have nowhere to go because nobody was willing to take them in. And so as a result, they would just be in this position where they had no safety net, nobody to care for them. And then they would fall back into their mental illness again, and then they would have to come back to the hospital. And so Legion, in the story, where does he live? He lives in a graveyard. So I think that would tell us that he's probably burned some bridges with his family and his friends. So what happens in the story is Jesus, he comes over, he heals Legion. And then, basically, all the people, the swineherds are really upset because they've just lost their entire herd. And they go to get the people from the city to bring them back to say, get rid of this guy, he just destroyed our livelihood. And they come back, and what do they see? They see Legion is in his right mind, and he has been healed. And they are, it actually says in the story, the last thing it says is, they were amazed. Now, that term amazed, what it means is that it means that you have been inspired, awestruck, or touched. In other words, they were surprised. That's what they were. They were surprised. Because why were they surprised? They were surprised because they thought this guy was never going to change. He was going to be this way for the rest of his life. And there he is, sitting there in his right mind. And so Jesus changed someone who they thought was unchangeable. And so what this story demonstrates to us is how surprise can sometimes open doors to an entirely different way of seeing the world. So yes, surprise can destroy our relationships, but it can build bridges to help us create better ones. And that's what I want to end with today. I want to talk about how that can happen. So if you're anything like me, you are probably very skeptical that people can change. I know I am. My experience tells me that people do not change easily. So from my vantage point, I'll give you a couple examples. So if you grew up and you were lying, cheating, and stealing all the way into your young adult life. I'm talking when you're a child. You know, people always do stupid things. But I'm talking like into your young adult life. If you do that there, chances are you're going to do that for the rest of your life. If you struggle with addiction from the time you're young, whether it be to drugs, alcohol, pornography, whatever it is, you will likely struggle with that for the rest of your life. If you have prejudices, bigotry, racism, from the time that you are young, it is likely that you will have that for the rest of your life. When you go down a specific path, it is very, very rare for a person to change paths. And I'm not saying it's impossible, I'm just saying it doesn't happen often in my experience. And that is why when somebody does change their path, I am literally delighted with surprise. And I'll give you an example of this. So I had a good friend when I was growing up. In our late teenage years, we spent a lot of time together. And this guy was wild. I mean, he partied a lot, he drank, he did a lot of drugs. He actually got charged with fraud. He stole credit card numbers and bought a lot of things that he shouldn't have bought. He got arrested several times. He got many DUIs, almost killed himself in a drunk driving accident. So he was basically on a path where my thought was he'll be dead in a couple of years, just because he was making so many bad decisions. And I thought it was in my best interest at that point to back away from him, because I didn't think it was going to do me any good. So I back away from the relationship, and about 10 years after that, we come back together at a certain point in time. I happened to be in town, and we got together, and I started talking to him, and I found out he'd gone to college, he got a degree in engineering, had a great job. I had really turned his life around. And talking to him, I can tell you, when you talk about surprised, I was surprised that he was able to do this, because I just assumed there was no way this was going to happen. But he was able to do it, and he's a delight to talk to. I mean, truly wonderful to talk to, interesting perspective on the world. Now, I tell you this story about my friend because the kind of surprise I felt in meeting him again is the kind of surprise that we need if we're going to be able to use surprise to change our spirituality. Because surprise and spirituality go hand in hand. Like, they are interlinked together. And I want to explain to you what I mean by this, because you might be thinking, okay, that's nice. So, surprise. You need to be able to be surprised by God. There are certain times in your life where you have to have your entire world turned upside down, and everything that you've assumed to be true has to be controverted. But here's the problem that we run into. That can't happen if you think you know everything. So, I know a lot of people, who think that they're right all the time. And so, if you think that you're right and you know everything there is to know, and your perspective is correct when it comes to religion, politics, and relationships in particular, then you will have boxed yourself in such a way that it's really impossible for you to grow. Because here's the thing. When you think you know everything, when you're so sure of yourself, when you've got it all nailed down, then you can't be surprised anymore. Because you know it, nothing's going to change what's happening. And here's the thing. If you can't be surprised, you can't change. Those two things go together. For you to change, you have to be able to be surprised. And I'm not standing up here judging anybody, because I'll tell you what, I am the very person I was describing as somebody who thought they knew everything. In my mid to late 20s, you could not have convinced me that I didn't know everything there was to know about the world. Everybody should be more like me. That was the way that I thought. Today I know that if everybody was like me, the world would literally collapse. So I am well aware of I've figured that out. But at the time, I really believed that. Like, I really felt like I knew everything. And there was a moment that occurred where I was very, very humbled in what I thought I knew. Now, I like to talk about the places I went to school, because it really gets TC all in a huff. He has, like, a little bingo card that he does every time I bring up my education that he marks down. But I like to talk about it because I think it's... because in some ways, right, going to a place like Oxford and Princeton, oh, there we go, yeah, he's rolling his eyes, you think that you know everything. You think, oh, look at all this stuff that I've learned. And what happened was, I figured out one day that everything that I've been taught at these big fancy schools, it was essentially meaningless. So I was working at the hospital, Trenton Psychiatric, and I was tasked with running some spirituality groups for these patients. So I had to take the Bible and help them come to terms with their mental illness. But many of these people, they were so sick that even on medication, understanding the most simplistic of concepts was very, very hard for them. And so I looked at them and I realized, like, today I see it, they're kind of like human shells. You know, there's human beings sitting in front of you, but They've been stripped of their humanity. And so every day, every week, I come back that we'd do this, and I try something new. I'd be like, okay, we're going to try something different. I come in, I do it different ways, but I was teaching them the stuff that I knew from these schools. And, like, they were not getting it, I mean, at all. Nothing was making sense to them. It didn't matter to them. And I eventually, like, after months of trying, I realized this is not working. I have to set this stuff aside, and I got to figure out something else. And so I did. I set it aside. And I remember the day I was like, you know what? I'm going to talk to them about hope. And so we sat down in the group and we talked about hope. The hope that maybe one day they could get better. The hope that maybe one day they could regain what they had lost. The hope that maybe one day they could leave the hospital and never return again. And I'll tell you what. Every single one of those people, no matter how sick or deluded they might have been, they responded to that idea of hope. And that is when I realized that no matter who we are, no matter how much has been taken from us, even if you've been stripped of your humanity, all of us deep down inside, we have this seed of hope inside of us. And so, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you've endured, no matter what you've suffered, no matter what you've lost, that seed of hope is there, and that's what needs to be watered. And that changed my entire way of looking at life. I mean, all of that. It was a really humbling experience for me to see that, but I'll tell you what, I would not have been able to do that if I had sat there and I said, you have to learn the things that I know. Like, this is the way, right? That you have to do it. Because I wouldn't have been able to be surprised by that, would I? I would have just set it all aside and I would have just kept on going and saying, nope, you have to do this. But I was surprised. And that surprise was transformative to me. I was surprised by hope. And it changed my entire ministry. And whether you realize it or not, every single one of my sermons, it revolves around hope. And so I want to end this morning by saying to you and asking you a question. When was the last time that you were surprised? When was the last time you were genuinely awestruck by the world and you sat back and you said, gosh, I never expected that to happen? And here's the thing, if it's been a while since you've been surprised, take this little piece of advice from a guy who thought he knew everything. Let go of what you think you know. Let go of what you're trying to control in the world and just enjoy life. Like, let life just wash over you, allow it to just be and experience it for what it is, and I guarantee you, at some point, you might just be surprised by hope. Amen.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about First Presbyterian Church of Arlington Heights, please visit www.firstpresah.org for more information on service times, directions, and to learn more about the First Pres family of faith.